Coffee Black Podcast. Today's a really dope episode. It's episode 8. Let us know if y'all can hear us all right. We want to make sure that the sound is all good, but I think we should be good. You know what I mean? We're here live at the Anti-Gentrification Coffee Club. Yeah, man, live and in effect. You'll hear coffee in the background. You hear the homies here. I'm actually getting a call right now. Let me see what's up. What up, my G? I think we got enough lids, bro. Just a cup. Yeah, man, so we live in effect. This is our first live taping of the podcast with the guest. We got the homie Delvin from Equatorial Coffee Consultants. We go back for a minute. I feel like an old pastor, you know what I mean? We're not going to be with you long today. But I definitely wanted to get into some cloth talk real quick and really tap into a lot. So the title of today's episode is Black on Black Grind, right? And the whole idea of Black on Black Grind is, well, okay, so here go the grinder sound for you. You feel me?
Nope. Gucci.
Here we go. Literally grinding. You feel me? Black on black grind is just basically like, there's this idea in the black community a lot of times that's thrown at us from people who don't support our community. What about black on black crime? You feel me? And people say like, oh, what about the issues in the community? And the interesting thing is that the obvious solution to that critique would be black solidarity, exactly. Right? Yeah. It would be Pan-Africanism. But a lot of times the same people who critique black on black crime got an issue with black on black grind, right? So you have an issue with black people intentionally supporting each other, but then you critique black communities because they don't support each other. So you can't have it both ways, right? So over here, we don't even really acknowledge your critique of black on black grind because we know that it's just proximity crime. But the reality is, even if we were to acknowledge that critique, we have things that we're doing to address that. And a lot of that direction requires black cooperation. There you go, my G. From between black communities, and so we need to be able to facilitate that process. Yeah, we need to be able to facilitate that process. So relationships throughout this idea of a supply chain or a black supply chain is kind of super important. So Delvin, would you mind introducing yourself? Tell people about what you do, and then I just want to get into why what you all do is so crucial. If this concept of black on black grind or all black supply chain, you know, some of y'all may not know about this, but if you know about this right here, you know what I mean? If you know that Dr. Claude Henderson, that Powernomics, then you understand what we're talking about. But we'll break it down even if you don't, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no doubt. First and foremost, man, thank you for having me.
Of course, brother. Of course.
Hospitality has been major, you know.
We in the South, baby.
Yeah, here in Memphis, you know, showing me nothing but love, so I appreciate that. My name is Delvin Stern. I'm the co-founder of Equatorial Coffee Consultants. We're a black-owned specialty coffee importer.
One of the only ones in the country, right?
Yeah, you know, I mean, as far as I know, I think that there are a few more out there, but
I don't know.
There's not many, yeah.
Especially black American-owned.
Right.
I think there are a couple who are owned by different people who are actually on the continent. Shout out to our brothers and sisters in the diaspora.
Right.
But there are not a lot of people who are descendants of slaves, American slaves, who are in the import-export business,
exactly.
Especially for coffee.
Yeah, and so our main objective is to cultivate and build relationships with coffee farmers from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically mm-hmm. African coffee farmers and those in Central and South America and Caribbean as well.
Mm-hmm.
And on the flip side of that, then helping them to share their coffees with the world. And on the flip side of that, being able to provide access to specialty coffee for ethical buyers here in the States and worldwide. So we just try to play our part and do what we can to further along sharing specialty coffee to, you know, our loved coffee drinkers of the world, man. And, And really, you know, if we're talking specifically for the black community, to be able to share this coffee industry, the specialty coffee industry with our community, as we know, it hasn't really been historically marketed to like it needs to be to our people. And so trying to make that connection.
Bro, there are so many different places we could go. But let's stay on that for a minute. I do want to talk about what y'all's experience has been like, but like let's stay on that for a minute. Like what is the issue historically, in your opinion, with why coffee isn't marketed? Because when I got into specialty coffee, I didn't see a lot of black people. And so the assumption was, oh, coffee, this type of coffee is not something that black people drink. You know, all of us, you know, maybe you had coffee at church growing up, you know what I mean, with a little powdery sugar and a powder creamer. Mm-hmm. At least we did growing up, or your grandma probably drank coffee. Right. But for some reason, when you enter this world of specialty coffee, coffee gets presented, or you see, it feels like, oh, this isn't a thing black people do. Right. Somehow, even though we all grew up, you know, kind of right. as a rite of passage, being able to sip out the cup and whatever, like it. We all know the history. If you can listen to the podcast, you know the deeper history, mm-hmm. right? For some reason, it gets presented as something that's not black.
Right.
And, you know, I'm just curious to know, you basically said the issue is marketing, mm-hmm. right? So why do you think that is, and kind of what's your understanding?
Yeah, you know, and I think, I don't think it's just pigeonholed to coffee, you know? I think that connection between Africa and African-American, Africans and African-Americans has just been disassociated for years, hundreds of years, right?
Yeah, no, so, and a lot of the homies growing up, I remember, you know, there's like this interesting, this term diaspora war that happens on TikTok, but I'm big on the TikTok and trying to stay tapped into the culture, and you have these arguments that happen once where, like, you know, you have a lot of people who are on the continent recently argue with people who have been removed from the continent for a while and say, man, y'all used to call us names in right. elementary school. Y'all used to call us, you know, African booty scratchers or whatever, and that hurt. That's right. traumatic. And so now I don't associate with you all.
Right.
Then you have other people with different who are more Pan-African in their mindset, saying like, man, we were ignorant. You know, that's an effect of colonialism. And there are other terms, like I think it's a kata, or other terms that get used to down African-Americans. But it's like we have way more in common than we do that's different.
Right.
And I think that divide and conquer strategy has been an effective one, you know?
Yeah.
And so we don't know our history. We don't have any connection to anything, like you're saying, that's what I'm hearing you say, really, that African, as African-Americans or descendants of slaves, even in the Caribbean or in Latin America, sometimes that connection is very separate. Mm-hmm. And so coffee
but
is
what's
the least
weird about it is that innately, we are connected.
Yeah.
You know, we kept realizing so much, yeah.
Yeah.
So much in our culture that is traditional.
Have you seen High on the Hog?
I have seen it.
Bro.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, that type of, it's not just coffee.
Yeah.
You know? It's food. Yeah. It's oil. It's whatever, gold, diamonds, you know, you can name
if
it.
If y'all haven't tapped into High on the Hog
right.
and seen that documentary, my wife and I just got back from Miami. We went down there to meet up with Martine. One of my mentors from Mayorga Organics. But it was also our anniversary, so it's kind of like work and play. So we watched, part of our anniversary, we watched High on the Hog. We went to a black restaurant that actually was started, I think it's called Red Rooster, if I got the name. I'm sorry if I'm butchering it, but it was started by an Eritrean guy down, mm-hmm. and he has a couple of them, you know, across the country, but one of them was in Miami. It's a black-owned restaurant. They hired from the neighborhood, and having gone to that place after having just seen this documentary about how African-American cuisine is.
Right.
And like the real connections, when you look at okra and like even the connections nice. Between cornbread and fufu right. or Carolina gold rice and like, you know, the Gullah Geechee culture, it's like, wow, we have connections. And I started thinking back, like, man, when I think about my grandmother and the food she used to eat and the food she used to grow, because they grew their own food.
Right.
So the agricultural practices that have been passed down,
right.
it was just there, bro.
Right.
And it's like, it's so African. But I never thought about it as such, and she didn't probably think about it as such. It was just tradition. But when you tap into the origin of tradition,
right.
you know what I mean? These things have roots, and I think there's definitely a movement, I feel like, within the last year to reclaim those roots and
yeah,
to reengage with what's going on.
And I think even with coffee, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, I think we're starting to realize that Africa produces some of the greatest coffee in the world.
Yeah, and the first coffee in the world.
And the first coffee. And the DNA from every variety, coffee varietal, all stem from Ethiopia.
Facts.
So,
facts. Especially when you're talking about Arabica.
Yeah.
Like any varietal of Arabica is going to come from Ethiopia.
Ethiopia.
You know what I mean? And then across the continent, I mean, I think Stephen from The Coffee Enthusiast says this a lot. He's like, there's like 136 varietals or species. Yeah. So Cafe Conifera or Stenifila, if I'm saying those right. I feel like I'm saying like Snuffleupagus. You know what I mean? But it's like, or Cafe Arabica. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, so the common term for one of those is Robusta. But there's one actually in Cameroon that people are looking at and saying, or is it Sierra Leone? One of those, they're like, yo, this might be the next varietal. Hoffman just did a video about it because Arabica is in danger right now. But again, when they want to find a solution, where are they going? They going back to Africa. You know what I mean? You're going
back to Africa. For us, it's important that we begin to tap into that history, tap into that connection.
Yeah.
And so that was the main cause for me starting this journey of coffee, specialty coffee, becoming an importer.
Yeah.
See, what was strange for me is that I was never a barista. I was never in a coffee shop. I started importing was my first thing.
So what were you doing before this? Like, what got you into importing?
So before this, man, I was a school administrator for a charter school.
Okay.
For like 7 years.
Shout out to the educator. Yeah.
Educator, you know. Before that, I was an operation analyst for the private bank, the Bank of America. And
there's something about this connection with educators and coffee. I don't know what it is, but like I vibe with people. I always end up connecting with people. Like, oh yeah, I used to teach. I used to teach too. You know what I mean? Like at a high level. Like I had a master's degree and taught for 10 years. Like it was like I was serious about it, but it was that community mindedness is if you bring something really unique to the table, but we can get into that.
And the importance of relationships, man.
Yeah, bro.
You know, that I think that's why it's an easy transition for our educators, for us to go come into coffee.
Yep.
Is that, you know, relationships is a huge, vital piece to what we do, right?
It's everything, man.
And so that might come easy to us because in education, you got to build relationships with these students because that trust is real.
Yeah.
You know, it has to be genuine, though. They don't mess with you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and people can tell.
Yeah, they can tell. And they don't
hide.
It's
a survival tactic. Right. It's a survival tactic to just be able to tell if someone's genuine or not because the amount of people who prey on people in our communities because there's so much need is significant. And so you can't tell when somebody about to hit you with the okie doke, that's the difference between life and death. And so that skill set, you got to learn it at an early age. And it falls into educators, especially in. You know, you see people who claim to have a genuine heart, but then they're gone the next year. Or you claim to be wanting to make an impact, but then you're not around the next week. It's like, there's so many people who float in and out. So, you know, that's a skill set I think that helps you now. But, like, at the origin, you were like, you transitioned from teaching. And how do you end up as one of the only black coffee importers in the country?
My master's degree was I had an MBA. My concentration was international business.
Okay.
International trade.
Well, why was that your MBA? if you were going to be
it was just following my interests.
Okay.
What I was interested in, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I've always been interested in travel and what the world resources can provide, you know, for me and my people.
Okay.
Going back, you know, studying Pan-Africanism, studying the Panthers, studying Marcus Garvey, Malcolm X. Countless of those, Booker T. Washington, man, you know.
Claude Anderson. Yeah.
You know, countless of teachers, you know, that come before me. And so I was always interested in importing goods from the continent or anywhere.
So
before coffee, I used to import toys, man. And this is as a side gig. It was a side hustle.
So while you were a school administrator?
Side hustling.
Oh, wow.
You know,
okay.
Importing,
yeah.
Bringing over toys, just trying to find extra income, things of that nature. And how I stumbled upon coffee, I was a best man at my best friend's wedding. And he was gifted some coffee from El Salvador, a Pacamado from El Salvador.
Yeah.
And while we was preparing for his wedding, we were drinking the coffee at night, you know, partying and running or whatever. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I was like, man, what's this? You know, that was my first time experiencing specialty coffee. So, it was totally different from Folgers, what my mom raised me on. And I just got hooked. And my first thought was, how can I bring this to the States?
Mm.
You know,
is this something
that they might want to bring
to
the States?
Is there a market for this?
Yeah. And so, that's how I began researching specialty coffee.
So let's tap into the marketing piece because you brought that up, right? Mm-hmm. When I was getting into coffee, again, it was kind of marketed as a very white thing. Whether you look at the ambiance of the shops it was being brewed in, the demographic that was being targeted with the branding, or the actual names that the coffee was given. Italian roast, French roast. Right. You know, these are things where you think, oh, this must be, you know, or the food that's served with it, like you're getting a croissant, you know, yeah. People are speaking, not speaking, no type of African, nothing. They're like, espresso, right, a cappuccino, right. You know what I mean? So you assume, you like, this ain't got nothing to do with Africa, which is fine. It's not like we're only eating, like money is green, food going in your stomach and your process is brown. So like, you know, it's not like you're only doing things, but just the idea of like where you assume this may be a cross-cultural experience for me, when in reality, there's an opportunity for a on-culture experience, you know what I mean? A monocultural experience to happen, or a connection or reconnection, a cultural reconnection. So like, what, give an example of like, for you, what's off in your opinion, if you look at the coffee, specifically the specialty coffee industry, what's off with its marketing? Like why does it seem like, my man, why does it seem like, this is really a live taping, y'all. You know what I mean? We're really in the shop right now. So you know what I mean? We're really kicking it. My man is in Memphis right now. It's the first one. So in your opinion, like, why do you think people, Memphis in the key, baby. So why do you think it is that people are not connecting? Why do you think it is that
that's a great question, Brad. Marketing to I think that, so when I got into it and I started to meet African farmers, right? And as you said, information is very whitewashed.
Yep.
I won't say that in a negative way, but it's coming. The story is narrated by non-blacks, yep. Which is a fact, right?
The infrastructure is colonial,
yes.
In its nature and in its origin.
And it's historic.
Historically, that's how. For a lot of people, that's how the content. For a lot of people, that's how the tighten that up. For a lot of people, that's how the coffee got to their country, was via European colonialism by way of the Dutch and the French and the Portuguese and whoop-de-whoop.
Right.
So, and we've tapped into that in other episodes, so you can go back and listen.
Right.
Specifically, season one, we tapped into it a lot. But the issue is that at the end of the day, there is a lot of, I don't know, like you said, whitewashing in the actual mechanisms that are in the industry.
Yeah,
you know
the story. So, like, what I started to realize as I started to communicate and cultivate relationships with African coffee farmers and producers, I started to realize that the narration of their story was kind of thwarted a little bit, kind of been twisted and told in a from a different lens, let's say.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So what I see in a coffee description from a huge coffee brand or supplier here in the States could say one thing in this paragraph, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when I'm talking to the farmer via WhatsApp or whatever the case may be, in person, whatever the case may be, that connection and that story feels and it hits a little different,
bro.
You know what I'm saying?
And so, it gives very much, if you sponsor one child for $5, it gives very much like poverty porn very, very saviors, put the cape on me.
Yeah. Energy,
you know what I mean?
No doubt.
And I think a lot of that time is a perspective. So we've been considering this one. We're talking with Michael Grant, who's a videographer that's going to come with us to Africa for our trip. By the way, special announcement on the podcast, the trip has been postponed to August. I'm still waiting on my passport. And so things are just clogged up right now. So I was actually supposed to have an appointment to talk with them today, but we're doing this podcast, so I'm going to reschedule it for tomorrow. But yeah, just as an update so you all know, we also had a special sponsor approach us for the Ethiopian leg of the trip, Catalyst Traders. So if you've had our coffee with Onyx Coffee last year, it was produced, the second drop of that coffee was produced by a single producer named Basha Bekele, 25-year-old young Ethiopian cat, super cool, doing cool stuff. The importers of that coffee reached out and they want to sponsor us so we can actually meet this brother and even possibly bring some of his coffee over, you know, You can't. Stay tuned for that. You know what I mean? When we were talking about the vision for the documentary, like we were saying, man, part of the what is important in telling this story is not just showing pictures of cherries or pictures like the little, you know, everybody knows this picture. You know, if you're watching live on YouTube, like everybody knows that picture, right? And it's like, we don't just want to replicate the imagery that's done, but we really want to show dignity and joy and honor and the ingenuity and the genius of Africans in coffee.
Exactly.
Because they're the pioneers of this thing.
Yeah. Just to add on to that.
Yep.
So when we started this thing, I realized the storytelling is super important. Mm-hmm. You know, how can we share the stories of the farmers mm-hmm. with the rest of the world? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
From a different lens.
Yep.
You know, that's just not like, oh, woe is me. Yep. Let's help them sustainable life and all that. And all that stuff is true. But like, you know, because we can get into pricing and all that too.
Yep.
But for me, it was about how can I tell this story from a Black lens and make that connection with African.
Which is unique, bro, because you're with a part of the America where you're from, I think, even has a unique perspective. Most recently, you let people know, you know what I mean? You're from the West Coast.
No doubt.
Yeah, specifically.
Born and raised Los Angeles.
Yeah, bro. And Nipsey, I think, has made this connection between Africa, and we talked about this in the episode with my homie Jonathan from Tristelle Coffee, but like the connection between what has happened to American culture, African-American culture, because of our disconnect and where the lack that we have and how our culture has kind of been like, it's been a stranglehold, like it's like been withheld, you feel me?
Facts.
And so in a lot of ways, shout out to my baby, she just walked through the building. What up, girl? How you living? Shout out Mrs. Coffee Black, King Coffee Black. What up, girl? But yeah, it's like our culture had even that respect for women and even that like dignity is missing. And Nip said when he went back, you know what I mean?
Right.
It changed his perspective on what life could be like as a Black person. And I think that's why it's so crucial for my end to connect African Americans in coffee just as a way back to get them Black to Africa. You know what I mean? That's the name of the working name for the documentary. Right. It's like, you know, Coffee Black to Africa. You feel me? But it's like, it shows you a different version of yourself.
Right.
And people talk about the importance of role models or representation. But to me, all those reasons of seeing yourself and a version of yourself and seeing possibilities and opening your imagination to what's possible, all that is times 10 on heritage. Like any reason you have for why representation is important, why role models are important, is multiplied by a million for why heritage and knowing your heritage is important.
Right.
And having a connection to your heritage. And we see, you can tell between Nip pre-going to Eritrea and Nip
coming back
post-going to Eritrea. It's a different human being. We wouldn't have the Nip that we had and that we all revere had he not had the opportunity to have his full humanity restored.
Right.
And that's what happens when you ship people from where they are. So
what's interesting too is that coming from LA, we talking about Nip, we kind of talking about the gang culture, right?
Yeah.
It's a sense of pride. It's a sense of community.
Yep.
That these cats.
That's what they're searching for.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
bro.
That's all it's about.
Yep.
And these gangs, these sets, you know, they ride for their homeboys. It's all about their homeboys.
Yep.
It's all about their community.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? So when you take that mindset and then you
give
expand
it resources
and give it
instead of putting a stranglehold on it.
Give it history, give
bro.
It substance.
And a future, opportunity. Because a lot of these things, the reason why things be so do or die is because people don't expect to make it past 25 bars. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, people don't expect to make it past 25. And so if you don't expect to make it, of course, your value on life is not going to be as great. But if you know you have a future,
right?
You pretty much can guarantee I'm going to make it to 70, 80, and my kids and their kids, then you start looking at that, your value system changes.
Right.
But when we know that young Black men are being incarcerated at such a high rate for nonviolent crimes and being like having charges trumped up and issues of police brutality, and we in a food desert, and there's so many things that are trying to kill you, it's like it kind of skews what you can value and it limits what you have an opportunity to appreciate.
Exactly.
exactly. or to value because it's like, well, I mean, I don't even know who I'm gonna get tomorrow.
Right.
So I'm not even thinking about what's the best thing right. long term for them. I'm just trying to make it.
Once you know, for us as African Americans, we don't really know our African history.
That's what I'm saying.
So once you get wind of that African history,
yeah.
you start to realize, like, damn, we survived hundreds of years.
Yeah, bro. Pre-slavery, we was doing some amazing things, and I feel like the opportunity in a lot of ways for Africa to become a powerhouse country was robbed by slavery and colonialism, because the opportunity for collaboration and for federation and for an opportunity to share resources didn't really happen the way it was supposed to. And so this is a perfect segue into, I want to talk about Ghana, right? And so the president of Ghana recently just made a big announcement about his opinion or their attitude toward export, right? And you're in the import business, so I'm curious to know what you think. You know, President of Ghana basically just told he went to it was so gangster, bro. He went to Sweden.
Yep, okay.
And people was not ready for this. They were celebrating their long history of collaboration. And he was like, "Yeah, we really appreciate you guys. Thank you for helping us with Ebola. We really." And so, however, it was a however for me, yo. However, we will no longer be exporting chocolate to Sweden. We are going to process all of our chocolate in the country, because we understand this was crucial, that the value in the supply chain is in the production and in the processing, and whoever controls the processing of the raw materials controls the largest percentage of the value in the production chain.
And so that right there
tells
me, like, yo, that just sounds like a reclaiming power.
Yep.
Feel me?
Yep.
So the understanding and that takes it back to, so this whole thing, I'm glad you segued that. It takes it back to us realizing that coffee is very similar.
Yep.
And we have an opportunity to reclaim that power of connecting with who produces the coffee that everyone loves.
Yeah, bro.
You know what I mean?
And so, we want to share that story.
Yeah.
We want to share the African perspective. One, because we want to support our brothers and sisters, but two, in seeing Black faces and Black communities flourish, it empowers Black people here to know, oh, that's something a Black person can do. And we can support each other's communities. You know, we have this concept of this idea of building generational wealth throughout the diaspora. And that's a lofty goal. You know what I mean? Recently, we had somebody ask us to, like, give a talk on that. And I'm not going to say who asked us, but I said, I'm not ready to give a talk on that because I don't know. I ain't got no wealth.
Yeah.
I'm still figuring it out. You know what I mean?
Mind.
But the idea and the concept, everything we do at Coffee Black pretty much has been an experiment. It's been like a, yo, what if?
Right.
But I think the idea and the possibility, somebody is eating
off
a $200 billion industry and it's not Black people.
Exactly.
That's the issue.
And you got to think about, like, just like what Ghana is doing, is the realization. First, you got to realize, right? Yep. First, it has to be a thought in your mind, the idea. So Ghana is thinking, like, yo, why aren't we producing this ourselves? Why aren't we processing and benefiting this from ourselves? So it starts there. So for us, it's the same way in the coffee game. Like, it starts with us realizing that we do have the power. Like, why can't I be a Black importer of coffee?
Why not?
Saying who? Yeah,
right.
Who's stopping me?
Nobody.
You know?
And that, I think that's a point you bring up a lot, bro, which I think is, you know, back in the day when Clubhouse was popping, we were all talking. And I think one of the things you pointed out a lot was like, okay, there are these issues that exist, but the opportunity for Black on Black grind is huge.
Yeah.
The opportunity to actually build this industry within the industry or this ethnic enclave within the industry is extremely possible.
Right.
And nobody's stopping us. There's no laws against it. There's no rules that you can't. It's just the imagination to see yourself in a place where you haven't seen yourself before.
And that's a cultural thing too.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Yep. Like, we've been dealing with racism in this country for hundreds of years, right?
Mm-hmm.
That don't stop us from being the influencers that we are.
Yep.
As
the
people,
the arbiters of cool.
Yeah.
Bro.
You feel me? Like, it don't stop. Like, you could be racist all you want, but that's not going to stop me from doing what I do.
Yep. No way, bro.
What I need to do.
We got this song called Anyhow. You feel me?
Exactly.
We going to make it anyhow.
Like, because that's what we have to do. So, for me, it was like, why can't I be an importer
importer. If I just met this African, then why can't I bring this over? What's stopping me? What's stopping me from educating the community and educating coffee, black coffee consumers on wanting something better?
Bro, and the reality is there's nothing stopping you, yeah, right? Like, that's what we found. I'm gonna go live on Instagram too. So if you're on Instagram, you know, if you want to hear the whole thing, you have to tap in with us there, or tap with us on YouTube to watch the restream or whatever. But you know, we'll get you guys in here for a little bit, because why not? You know what I mean? So the reality is, like, you know, we're it's not just that we can't, but I think that it's harder. It would be way easier, man. I feel like I'm just dropping a lot of like tidbits right now, but it's that type of podcast. So, we had a TV producer reach out. Okay, they're like, "Yo, we want to do a story about what's been going on and kind of flip it as a." And as I was talking to him, I was like, "Yo, things. To be honest with you, if we wanted to, I would just throw hella sugar and everything for whether from the branding, and we would keep it moving." And we would just make money. Because even literally, we know sugar and cream are drugs. Right. Just like coffee's a drug, it's just that these things happen to be more damaging for your body. Fat and sugar, the body craves those things once you give it to it. That's why corporations like McDonald's and so on and so forth are so big, and why when you look at the ingredient list, it's crazy, right? So it's like, if we wanted to just make money, you wouldn't take time to educate people. You would just go to the cravings they already have. But when you want to create or build a palette, and what's up to everybody on Instagram? We're recording live on YouTube, so we're like halfway through the podcast. You want to hear the whole thing, you can watch it on YouTube and tap back in with us, you know what I mean? Or wait till it comes out on Spotify and stuff later on. But yeah, the issue is, like, you know, if you want to be able to get this whole thing, like, it's going to require moving a little bit slower, so that we can actually bring people with us. You know what I mean? And that's kind of my vision for this shop. It's like, I want to actually take the time, like, we live in this neighborhood, I want to take the time to actually show people what coffee can be. And it doesn't mean that you get to just come in as a coffee nerd and be like this coffee imperialist and decide what people's palates are. Right. No, it's the time to have to really cipher with people. Right. You know, like Paulo Freire calls it a co-generative dialogue, where you're building meaning together as a community. You know, in hip hop, we just call it a cipher. Everybody gets to keep it rhyme. You know what I mean? Everybody, doesn't matter if I think I'm the coldest or you think you the coldest, we all in this circle together. We all got to be on the same beat. You don't get to change the beat. I don't get to change the beat. We all build it together. You know what I mean? And so, like, that's one of the things that I think, one of the reasons why I feel like we haven't seen as much development for African Americans in the market is because it's harder and the market has to be developed. But my thing is, if you develop the market, then you own the keys to the market. And so if you do that hard work to actually introduce it, then you have the ability to like control access to it. Right. And if we control access to our market, then that means we get the keys back to our dollars and we can start seeing our money circulate versus what I call the Popeyes effect, which is when other corporations and communities own the keys to our market and they introduce things. We them, but then none of the money from that excitement and that marketing that we do comes back to us. You know what I mean? And that's where Dr. Clyde Anderson's book is so crucial. You know what I mean? That's where his book, this book right here, if y'all haven't read it, Poweronomics.
Get that
joint, bro. You know what I mean?
Educate your mind.
It's crucial because it's like, yo, he basically says we spend a lot of energy on political activity. When political activity, when you look at how the ethnic minority has made progress in America is generally the fourth or fifth step. Yeah, first you actually have to have a community, which is step one. And a lot of times we look at our communities, we don't have neighborhoods. We just got the hood. You got the neighbor got cut out. You know what I mean? Like, it ain't no, it's like you have places where people live, and even now people are way more transient. You know what I mean? Where people don't even stay in the same community. Like, past a couple years, so it's hard to build roots there. But then after that, you have a family, you have a community, and then as you have that community, then you start starting businesses, and then you start to vertically integrate those businesses and make those businesses profitable and get some people in the supply chain who share the same values, right, and heritage as you. Not to be exclusive, but just to say, like, you know, and that, let me know if this is too deep, you know what I mean? But that's vertical integration from Clyde Anderson's perspective.
And another key term he uses in the book is ethno-aggregation.
Yeah.
Where it's like they're within that community, there's individual people contributing to the collective.
Yep.
So
yep.
As for me, if we're going to talk coffee, I'm contributing the green bean.
Yes, bro.
Right?
Yep.
As a brand, you're about yesterday, but it's all about
one more time. I think this stream dropped out.
Oh, about ethno.
Yeah, so one more time.
The vertical integration is important in terms of producing everything in-house, or coming from, you know, all black supply chain, from
yep.
the production African producers to the importer and to a black brand to
he
the
didn't bring up coffee in the book.
But
he's like, you wanted the industry where you already have black consumers and that. Or you already have black producers. Coffee is interesting because you actually have both.
Right.
Not in the specialty coffee period, but on specialty coffee is like 1% mm-hmm. of coffee. It's the top one coffee that's produced. Is right. way. Like, so you got, but the other 99% right. that Folgers, right. right, the community coffee,
right.
that like, Cafe Bustelo, like right. that's black and brown people, yeah. right? And so, not all, of course, but like, we're large consumers of those products and primary producers of those products.
Right.
So it makes sense for us to integrate
right.
that supply chain. It right. just makes sense. You know what
and
I mean?
And then after the integration comes the ethno aggregation, where there are different roles that everybody could play within those supply chain.
Yep.
So
yep.
If I'm the importer and you're the brand,
yep.
then you need a roaster.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
you need an importer, you need a brand,
yep.
you need somebody who makes cups, you need somebody who's a graphic designer,
somebody who does packaging,
who does packaging,
somebody who's a Q grader,
right?
You need somebody who fixes the espresso machine,
exactly.
You need somebody to build a company to create the espresso machine,
exactly.
Yeah,
so,
bro,
there are so many roles.
We just got, hey, yo, Monty, can you bring me that milk, that MYLK?
Oh, yeah,
that we just got. So, we actually just got a package in today. It's like, you know, the black joint I'm talking about. We actually just got a package in today. James Hoffman was, got a call. We actually just got a package in today. Hoffman was. Just they finished producing, or he was collaborating with this new barista milk. And like alternative milks is another market where like there's opportunity for scientists to create research. So like this joint right here, you feel me? It's crazy, right? And we just got a package there and somebody just sent us some to sample. And I was just thinking, like, it's crazy how the Mosai work. I was like, y'all want to try that?
Right.
And then we get a package today. Right. You know, with two of them joints right. in there, you know what I mean?
Right.
But it's like, this is another innovation in an area where people can go and create opportunities for generational exactly. wealth. Opportunity. The market's wide open. You know yeah. what I mean? Especially for products that are intentionally targeted toward the needs and desires of the black community.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like yeah. this is a dope product.
Right.
But it's not a product specifically targeted toward black people.
Yeah. No.
And so not that it has to target toward black people, but if you do, it makes black people more likely to feel like that product is something they could use.
Right.
And so that's a whole you can eat off that. Like, right. of course you had clothes before, but it's something special about Rockaway.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's something special about food.
Because it's aligned yep. to something that you relate to.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And
yep.
I think that's what's important. It's important what you're doing for the community, what you're doing in this space.
Yeah, bro.
What we're doing in this space.
Yeah.
It's all about staking our claim, man.
Yeah. And, it creates opportunities for collaboration
exactly.
as opposed competition, bro.
Exactly.
It's like we don't have enough. We don't even have a real industry yet. We don't even have all the points in the supply chain supply.
Exactly.
You know, to be at a point to compete with other brands.
Right.
It just doesn't make sense.
Right.
Like, let's get the supply chain built first exactly. and make sure we got all the spots done.
And
then let's make sure everybody's eating. And then once you have a thriving, then you can compete.
Exactly. Right.
But like, you don't see Chinese restaurants competing with other Chinese restaurants.
Yeah.
It'd be like three or four of them joints on the
exactly.
same block.
And
they cousins. Year. You know what I mean? And they all eating.
Exactly.
Like
everybody's gonna eat.
Yep.
And I think that's, you know, just like one of the mentors in this industry, Phyllis Johnson, has told
yeah. me. Oh,
like,
the queen.
The queen, no doubt about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, shout out to Phyllis.
Yeah, she said one time that, like, African Americans, we don't make even 1% of this industry.
Yep.
So
we'll have room
how
to be
can
competing.
We compete with each other when we don't even have yeah. anything to compete
with? Yeah. You ain't even got, bro, you ain't got so enough we, chips to play.
Yeah.
You know
so
what I mean?
So we have to be even making a dent in the industry. So we got to learn to work together. And it's all a journey, man.
Yep.
Like, everybody's learning on this journey.
Yep.
You know, nobody's greater than the other person. You
I'm
know?
Saying, bro. Everybody's and we all grown. Need each other just to right. make it to the finish line.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Just exactly. to get there. Like, I can shout out other people like Black and White. We've been out of bags. And then the bag, especially during the pandemic, bags are super backed up.
Yeah,
and our company had just gone viral because of the Love Black People shirts. So I was like, out. I was like, yo, does anybody have bags? You can just front me. I'll pay you back. And like right. Black and White sent me bags.
Love.
Mayor sent me bags.
Love.
Portia sent me bags. It's right. like, I got $200. I just sent it to you. Black and White was like, you ain't even got to pay. It was
right.
like, you ain't even got to. You know what I mean? So you got people who just are, we just got to help each other get there
right.
before we get. Once we all get there, sure, yeah, we can compete.
Right.
You know what I mean? But we're not even there yet.
Exactly.
And our communities haven't even been educated about the opportunities. You know what
right.
I mean? Like, one of the coolest things to me is, like, in the building right now, we got Monty, right? Who's one of our newest baristas. He does a morning shift. You know what I mean? You're. And, like, man's be, like, just seeing his progression. We just had Twiz come down. 2017 World Latte Art Champ.
Baby.
The only Black dude to ever win. Came down, did a free training down here. And Monty was able to go to that thing. And seeing Monty's progression and his excitement, you know what I mean? We had a little latte in company latte art competition, man's place. And then since that point, that was like a week ago. Now, and then he just was working on the Monk's Head. And every, like, he'd come here at night, in the early in the morning, he'd be like, yo, you at the shop? I want to practice. Yo, you at the shop? I want to practice. You know what I mean? Like, he even just did something drastic yesterday. I ain't going to take his announcement or whatever. But you know what I mean? Like, man's did something drastic yesterday so he could be more available to grow because he's excited about what's happening. Like, you know how many other young Black men and women would flourish if they had the opportunity to tap into this industry?
Right.
You know what I mean? But it takes people who are going to sit down and really open it up and create spaces where we can access it outside of the negative cultural influences of gentrification,
right?
Right? Outside of the negative cultural influences of colonialism. But we can just access it and see ourselves in it. You know what I mean? It takes people making those choices like Twiz did to say, I'm just going to go. He came on the strength. You know,
right.
Twiz be charging bands to show up.
Right.
He was
right.
just like, I just want to come support. And he came and he was like, I've never seen this many Black baristas interested or showing up for a coffee training. Like, it just blew my mind, bro. It was like 20 people here. To me,
right.
that's not a lot. You know what I mean?
Right.
But he was like, for where the industry is right now, that's a lot, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's the point, the education piece that's so important. Exposure piece that's so important. And it's all about, like we're saying, we're young. We're like infants in this industry, man, in terms of the African-American side of knowing how we could reclaim that power.
Yep.
It's so new. That industry, like you said, is not even really built yet.
Yep.
We building the foundation blocks right now for that.
Yeah,
and
bro.
I think that you can't start out being fragmented and expect to build a pyramid.
And
you feel me?
Bro, that's
a
bar.
The foundation.
Yeah.
You
can't
so.
Yeah, divided lines and expect to have a pyramid, bro.
Yeah,
you gotta have a whole shape, bro.
Yeah.
It takes multiple whole shapes.
Exactly.
It takes
layers of whole shapes.
Yeah, I'm saying in order to get to a point where you can have one pyramid.
Right.
Not even to start arguing about whose pyramid is the best.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
well, whose pyramid?
Yeah,
you
bro. Who does it belong to?
Right.
Nah, none of that, bro. It's like, man,
right.
it belongs to the Most High. Be honest, can't nobody make coffee grow.
Right. Exactly.
it was just growing. You know what
right.
I mean? Now it's like, now the question is, what do we do with it?
Right.
How do we best steward that resource?
Right.
So nah, man, that's powerful, bro. I definitely wanted to touch on that. I feel like we hit the situation with Ghana. We talked about Dr. Clyde Anderson. And then the last thing really I just wanted to talk to you about, bro, was like the connection to hip hop. And I know that you spent some time as an MC. You know what I mean? I don't know if you're gonna see bars while we hear, you know what I mean?
Right.
But like
no
I think when I think about where the Black coffee industry is. It's kind of similar to hip hop in its infancy, especially the African American coffee industry.
No doubt.
Whereas, like, we're still learning the technology.
Right.
Like, it's kind of rudimentary, you know. And so far as people are like, okay, first was black coffee importers. And I think you got all the way back to Jackie Robinson, mm-hmm. right? Producers, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? To Phyllis Johnson, right? Mm-hmm. To me, I feel like that's like
that's the beginning of it,
you know what I mean? And then you get coffee, black producers, and people, you have people like Lim and mm-hmm. Twiz and Michelle, who are like really competing on a super high level, right? And then you start getting, you know, brands, you have people Red Bay. Right. Exactly. That's what I was finna tap into, who are like doing really, really great stuff. And you're starting to see more brands, people like Portrait, people like ourselves, Black and Bold, Black. The Enthusiast. But it's like, okay, cool. Now we're seeing brands, right? So we went from importing kind of like more production side. Then you start like really commercial grade stuff to specialty end, but it's like the back end. Mm-hmm. Then you start seeing, baristas, now we're seeing brands. Reminds me of hip hop, you know what I mean? Yeah, where it was like, first it was just like parties.
Right.
It wasn't really anything specific and you just had DJs. And then the DJ would kind of like, hey, put your hands in the air, you know what I mean? But it was like, even the beats, were just like rudimentary. Like it wasn't you didn't have sidechain compression. Right. You know what I mean? You didn't have weights or none of that. Right. You didn't have DAWs. It was just a drum break. You just gonna loop the drum break. That's the song. You know what I mean? And then you started getting, okay, we got B-boys and tab. People are dancing now. And now people getting label deals. Or now you might get a single. You get Rappers Delight. You know what I mean? And so then you get to the point where you start seeing people like, you move beyond the like Furious Five and Grandmaster Flash. You start seeing people get way more complex with the technology. And I think for me, if we think about coffee as a technology, right? Like, what do you think the next step is? More creative with the use of that technology to achieve the ends that we want to see through vertical integration or ethno aggregation or Pan-Africanism or black on black grind, any of these terms, like what's the next step? What are the next roles that need to be filled in order to move our proficiency with that technology?
That's a good question. I think the first joint is similar to hip hop, right? Our creativity starts to shine through.
Yep.
And whatever industry we put ourselves in, man, it don't matter whether it's basketball, tennis, you can name a basketball. Once that black culture comes into the industry, it shifts the whole industry.
Yep.
So I think we have began to see.
Can you give an example of that? Of like where is the uniquely African?
This perfect recall.
Yeah.
And I'm going to use you right here.
Awesome.
You know, so.
No.
Straight up. The coffee was just specialty coffee. Kind of dry, kind of uppity, whatever.
Yep.
You know, you can just take what you've been doing so far. Like, you know, when I first saw you come on the scene, or when we talked even before your brand.
People don't know we go back.
Yeah, straight up.
We were talking before Gucci Mane was even officially a brand. We were still looking for importers.
And that's what I was leading to. Gucci Mane, right?
Yep.
When I first saw it, I was like, Gucci Mane, like, yo, this cat just flipped the whole wordplay of a region in Africa, combined it with a rapper, and made this creative, innovative brand.
Yeah.
That's come out with Gucci Mane. It just relates to us, to that hip hop culture.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So, power of a name.
That's the power of a name.
It tells you who it's for and who it's from.
And you relate to it immediately if you're from that culture. Yep. So that's what I'm saying. Like, when you brought that type of innovation and creativity to the industry, you bring the merch from the sneaker culture and the streetwear culture to coffee.
Yeah.
You feel me?
Yeah.
You see it. You see how crazy the merch game is right now. Like, you haven't seen that in coffee like this.
In terms
of people wearing hats, wearing shirts, wearing mugs, stickers,
fanny packs. Yeah.
Whatever you sweaters, hoodies. It's like, it's all that creativity is starting to seep through the industry. And what we're going to see is our culture starting to be creative in how we market coffee.
Yeah.
How you marketing coffee to the hood. Yeah. How you got these young cats. I've been here for the last 2 days. I've seen a lot of young dudes, guys and females come through here.
Yeah.
And understanding and wanting to learn more about coffee. That's that's powerful in itself. Right. That's influential in itself. Yeah. And I think the way you present
coffee. You're gassing me up right now. I ain't going to bless over here.
But no, it's all about like just the opportunities to be able to.
Oh, shout out, speaking of which, me and my twin just walked in. You know what I mean? Got the yellow hat and the purple shirt today. You know what I mean? You stay twinned out.
And I think that's the part of the new roles of what you're saying we're going to see in the industry. That's one thing.
Yeah, in hip-hop, you call it freaking it, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, how we going to freak the
beat? How you going to freak it?
Yeah, bro. It's like, you going to freak it in different ways.
Like I say, with Mama's Brew, shout out to Mama's Brew.
Too. Hey, that's what I'm saying, bro. Sierra, one of the ghosts, bro. She was one of the first people I knew of this new wave of coffee when I was looking around.
Right.
Just as a consumer.
Right.
Right. I was looking for black brands, and she was one of the first that I found. You know,
and she brings a whole new vibe, different vibe to the game. Yep. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that's what we're going to see. I think that's important in terms of information about the storytelling, what you're going to do in Africa, what we're trying to do in Equatorial in terms of the storytelling of the farmers is important from our lens of what we see, the black and African Americans, how we perceive the African producers, you know, and telling the story from our lens. And I think
The lives y'all been doing, the relationships y'all have built, my man told me it was a dude, and he's known as the king of Gucci. I was like, that's hard. Like, I don't even know what that is. That is that they got a throne?
Shout out to Torre YG.
Yeah, bro. And you hooked me up and connected me so I can actually reach out, have a phone call with my man. And that's our whole brand is built around Gucci and the Aromo people and supporting them. So it's like, because those are the people who put me on to the game. Like, they put me on to everything I know. So shout out to the Aromo people, you know what I mean? And it was like, we want to be able to represent this on a real level. You know what I mean? And so, like, having people who are importers is crucial because that's what allows people to be able to have those authentic relationships and the transparency to actually see yourself in the industry. Because if I just purchase a coffee from an importer who's not interested in representing the coffee or the farmers or the culture or the perspective, then it is a good coffee.
Right.
Which is cool, not empowering.
Right.
And the empowerment comes from when you get to see yourself or see someone like you, ability for what you can do to see the inspiration for why this young lady has a family and she's been in coffee for excellent and the coffee's doing this really well. And like, man, what can I do to achieve to level of greatness, of black excellence? And so I think it's crucial, man. Like, I want to shout out a brand to me that I think has been killing it. I really feel like Dead and No Freak West Coast Scene has been killing it. And Gilly Brew Bar. Like, those three to me are like, they got the merch is cold, the relationships they have with people, the way that they approach it, it just feel different. All of them doing it different ways.
And the fusion that you see with our culture, coffee, you know, the way No Freak Coffee is marketing,
bro.
They bring,
bro.
And it's similar to what y'all doing.
Like, but they took it to another level, bro. Like, I feel like
doing it big.
It really feels like Supreme. Like, it feels like like even more niche than Supreme.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, because Supreme's kind of mainstream now. It's like,
and their idea of the the freelance cafe.
Bro. And taking the idea of it and connecting it to what happened in Italy. Which was a colonizing country, but then to make an authentic connection, connect that to what happened with people during Prohibition, and then connect that to the pandemic, like, crazy. And just the hustler's mentality, back. Like, it's so crazy, bro, and to see the innovation, like, it's, bro, it really reminds me of hip-hop, because it's like, at first it was just, hey, we can rap. Then that was cool. We can get a drum loop. That's cool. Right. But now it's not, can we get a drum loop? Now it's how you gonna freak the drum loop.
Right.
How and you it's gonna freak like the sample?
Where you saw Rakim, you know, even with lyricism.
Yep.
Everybody's rapping a particular way.
Yep.
Rakim, Daddy Kane come along, and they start double timing. They start flipping lyrics. And start telling more metaphors.
Now it's about
now you're about to stop.
Yeah, it's about
so that's style. you see Coffee Black style.
Yep.
You see No Free Coffee style.
You see Portrait style.
Portrait.
Yep.
Everybody's busy.
Yep.
Red back.
Yo, everybody busy brand so cold. It's like, I don't want to start naming people because somebody will be mad at me because I love them out. You know what I mean? But like, it's crazy. You got the homies here in the city, Boycott Coffee.
Right.
Like, it's so many. Lanissa just dropped her joints. You got Hustler's Cup.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Shout out to her. Hey, congratulations too.
For sure. For sure. You got Steven. They doing it. Like, it's like so many different lanes, bro. Now it's really like, how are we going to how are we going to flip it? What's your style? What's your flow? And it's not about like, well, just rap exists. It's not just Black Coffee exists.
Right.
Now it's like, how do you do it?
Exactly. So when you ask like, yo, what's next?
Yeah.
We seeing what's next.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
All these brands we mentioning.
Yep.
We are bringing the new innovation and the creativity that Specialty Coffee hasn't seen.
Yeah.
And especially this industry ain't seen no swag like this. That's just facts. Let's just be real with it. You know what I mean? For sure, bro.
You know what I mean? Shout out to the new merch.
Yeah, you know,
y'all gonna cop the new Wakanda merch you just dropped, bro, for Juneteenth.
And I think that's the beauty of what we're trying to expand. I think in terms of importing, we have so far to go. If we work together and work with how we move, you know, we got to work with how we move in this industry in terms of how are we being intentional and working together? And we all growing together.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because nobody's perfect, man.
Right.
But everybody has good intentions. Everybody has a good heart.
Yeah.
When you come across people who have those good intentions, then good things start to happen. So,
bro, like, it makes me think about this fact. Just that, like, as each of us creates a brand that has notoriety, that has a reputation, you know what I mean? Then that creates a market and a demographic that exists.
Exactly.
And once that demographic exists, they're going to look for other similar brands. It's like once somebody starts really getting dunks, you know, the shoe game is flying now. Right. But once somebody starts getting into the Forces, into the Jordan 1s, then it's like, Then it turns into, let me see what's up with the Yeezys.
Right.
Then it turns into, let me see what's up with the Pumas. Mm-hmm. Then it turns into, like, so it creates a demand, right? And so as each brand starts, you know, we really want to encourage you. If you're Black here, or if you're from an underrepresented community, you're thinking about starting a brand, even if you don't know, because we never knew what we was doing.
Exactly.
We never had no investors, so we just started. Right.
And that's our Instagram culture.
Put it out there, right? With all that into, yeah. You know what I mean? So,
where
like, yeah, we did it like sneaker culture. It's like limited supply of these.
Right.
Like these shirts, we only making 100 of these.
Right.
You know what I mean? I think we got 86 left.
Right.
Something like that from this morning.
So, get it before it's gone.
You feel me? But it's like those opportunities and that mentality creates a demand. Even if it's small, but that demand over time becomes cumulative.
Right,
it becomes exponential, and then you have a market.
Right,
right. And I don't think we're at a point where we have the market. I think we're creating the market. We're creating the demand. We're creating the edge. But like even like Monty and KD, who are two pieces who do morning and afternoon shifts, like I see the way they engage customers. They're creating a demand,
right?
Because it was people didn't know that they wanted. You know, if you watch Snowfall, you are introducing. You know what I mean? That product. To the market, they had to give out free samples. You got to allow people to get hit. The coffee's a legal drug game. You know what I mean? You feel me? You the importer, you the plug.
I'm the. What's my boy name from the Snowball?
Yeah, bro.
But it's like
instead of being a predatory plug, you're a positive plug. To hit the alliteration real quick, my daddy was a preacher. We got put the T's on. You know what I mean? But like, it's one of them situations where it's like, man, now to actually create demand. And to me, that's the biggest need. Create the market. Create demand.
And
create,
what's important,
educate
too,
consumers.
Two things. What's important, one is that as you create your demand and you create brand, somebody's always watching you, observing.
Yeah.
Which will cause them to start from where you are. And
yeah, bro.
What you're doing
and inspire
their
demand.
Own,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
That's number one. Number two is, that's why I keep talking about being, I'm always preach to being intentional, because once the outsiders or non-Blacks and other ethnicity groups and try to take control of the Black consumer market, right, of coffee.
Yeah.
Right? Because there is a market out there. We just got to tap into it.
Yeah. We got to educate it. We got to activate.
Cultivate and activate.
Yep. We just got to activate the market.
The first thing we're going to do is get mad when somebody else come in there and for that market. Yep.
Or just tap me in.
So if we don't tap into it right now and be able to control it, like we talk about Dr. Claude Anderson, it's like we got to control it just like we see the Chinatowns in every city.
Yeah.
Hispanic communities in every city. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what they do with their culture. They cultivate their culture, barriers in their culture. Not to say that you can't and be.
Oh, you
patron.
Can definitely eat. We did Chinese food yesterday.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? I'm about to hit the Chinese sub shop today. There's more so saying you want to make sure that the first 5-10 times that money circulates, that it makes sure that it feeds the people who it comes from.
Exactly.
And then after that, it can spread out into the larger economy, but that actually makes the economy more stable because now money will continue to this community because they're stable because they can produce consistently. It's one of those joints, man, where it's like, I think my grandma had this saying, you know, my granddad was in like one of them quartets, you know, they used to say like, sweep around your own front door before you try to sweep around mine. Right. And I've been thinking about this idea, if you flip it, you know, I got to sweep around my own front door before I try to sweep around yours. Right. You know what I mean? It's like I got to clean my own room first before I can show up and help you clean yours.
Yeah,
you got to
clean yours.
Yeah, I got to make sure my otherwise, I'm never going to be in a position to consistently help take care of myself. So that's really what I mean when I say black on black grind. It's just like, man, let's find the energy and collaborate and make it exponential with other black entrepreneurs and businesses so that we can use that to stabilize our communities because our communities are destable. Right. But I found like a lot of times, bro, in trying to engage or hire or when I was a teacher, man, trying to mentor, it's like, bro, man, it's so much danger in our communities. It's so much instability from housing instability to food instability to medical instability. Like, you don't know how long somebody's going to be with you.
Straight up.
And so we forget talking about the industry. We just talking about survival, like to have people around long enough to train them.
Right.
You feel me?
Right.
Like, that's a real reality.
And we got so much other shit that's on top of us already. Bro. It's hard to, you know, with all this systemic racism, shit that's forced us to bring us down.
Yeah.
Competing with each other is just an added shit to that.
Yeah,
added weight to that.
Yeah.
So, like, why compete with each other?
Let's all get healthy.
Yeah.
Let's get well. And I think that's the reality, bro. I think it's a good place to end it is to say, like, hey, you know, if we really want to be able to do this, we're going to have to do this from a position of encouraging each other and from helping us all to get to a point where we can be well.
Right.
And I think you need multiple roles in the supply chain from importers to farmers. You know, we made a whole list, but you know, you even need people who are just roasters and don't have a brand.
Right.
Who are going to be able to roast for other people who are interested in starting a brand, but don't have the resources to, you need people who are training roasters and you need, you know, there's so many different things that are needed. So man, we want to open up the floor for Q&A. If you're in the Patreon right now, you have a link that's in the Patreon. It should be live. Look, send me a message if it's not, but it should be live. You should be able to actually chime in. And if you want to hop in here, go live with us and ask a question, you can do that. If you're live on the Instagram with us, you can ask the question with the little question button. And we'll stay online for 5 or 10 minutes just to make sure that we give you guys the opportunity to hop in and do that. If you're watching live somewhere else and you want to hop in, just go on to Patreon. First 10 people get to join the live for free and just chop it up with us, ask some questions, do a Q&A. But yeah, man.
Yeah, and if you're looking for, we got
Beans.
Yeah,
yo, plug. So where can people find you while we're waiting on folks? Where can people find you if they want to work with you?
You can find us, Equatorial Coffee Consultants.
Yep.
On IG, equatorialcc.com. Hit the website.
Yep.
You know, right now we have a couple Kenyan offerings that we brought over that just landed like a month or two ago. That's fire.
Yo, y'all got any natural Kenyans?
No, both are washed.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Both are washed.
I forgot. I slept on the natural Kenyans last year. Yeah, I put my bid in now when the natural's come in.
Yeah, we got
remember your boy. You know, that's my father's favorite coffee.
And then we
We're bringing over a container, Ethiopian, with three different.
Yo, whoa, container talk?
Yeah, you know.
Bro.
And that's what I'm saying, man.
Bro, the progression is y'all bring a container. So people don't understand. Okay. Coffee costs, if you're paying a good price for coffee, you're paying anywhere from $2.85 to $3.85 a pound. Would you say that's fair? Okay, fair price.
FOB.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So that's what you should be paying if you're paying, you know, fresh out the boat. You feel me?
Right.
But a bag of coffee is about 156 pounds, if I'm getting my numbers right.
Yeah, 152, 156.
Yeah. It's like 132 after it's roasted, right?
Is that
right?
Well, so in Africa, they have 60 kilogram bags,
okay,
which equate to 132 pounds.
The plug.
Yeah, 70 kilogram bags are generally in Central and South America.
Okay.
So that's 156. That's where you're getting that from.
Okay.
So, so then you take, once you roast it, you're going to have to decrease probably 15 to 20%
of
that coffee.
Because it shrinks, you feel me? So all this is like, this cloth talk right here is game if you're trying to start. But what we're looking at is once you do this, right, you have the opportunity to actually build. And like you take this, you're, you know, let's say on average you're paying $3.50 a pound. You feel me? So $3.50, you got your phone on you, $3.50 a pound. Mm-hmm. You do that, you multiply 350 times, let's say 150 average, right? How much money you look?
Wait, say it again.
If you're a roaster, you want to just get into the game, you're new to it, right? You want a puff coffee, right? With most people, most importers, if you're gonna buy, you gotta buy at least a set.
Right.
People not gonna do like they're not gonna chop it up. You know what I mean? It's hard. And it takes extra infrastructure.
You're gonna put them in Nick bags.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like we're not doing dime bags for for the raw. You know what I mean? For the green. Now if you go on my website, you can buy a dime of Gucci. You can get like a Gucci that's 4 ounces. You feel me?
Yeah.
We go hook you up and it's just $6. So you know what I mean?
Jose. You actually can do that.
But so that's how much is that? You feel me?
350 times what?
350 times, $3.50 times 150 pounds. Let's just say that.
Oh, 150 pounds.
Hey, yo, Jose, if you want to go live, the link's in the Patreon too. If you want to go live with us on what you call it? Black Lives Matter equal KKK 2.0, right? No, wrong. Paul Greenman got a troll in there, bro. You wrong. what were you saying?
Yeah, so 350 times 100 pounds is probably around $525.
So you're looking at $525. Now, out of that, you probably can get reduced down to, let's say, 130 pounds. Mm-hmm. You do 130 pounds, which is 16 ounces a pound. A bag of coffee has 12 ounces a pound. So you're looking at somewhere around like 170, 200 bags of coffee, which you can flip for a different price. But let's say on average, you're doing $15 a pound. So then you're saying, at least, you know what I mean? You're going to be able to make, what is that? I just lost my math, bro. $15 a bag. You got at least 150 bags. You're going to be looking at, let's just say 200 a bag. So you would make $2,000.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Off that, so it's a profit, maybe like 75%. Now, when that roasting costs bags, but just on average, let's say you make a 50% profit, like being able to do that is decent for you to start your business, and that's what we were looking at. But that's off one sack,
right?
A pallet got 10 sacks,
right.
So then you multiply that, let's say $2,000 times 10, you're looking at $20,000 worth of coffee. A container got 30 pallets, right?
Yeah, 300.
Yeah, so now you took that $20,000 and you just multiplied that times 30. Somebody do that math for me. What's 20,000 times 30? You feel me? I'm waiting on. I feel like I'm back in the classroom again. Raise your hand if you. That's $600,000 worth of coffee on one container. That's big bags. My man's moving, you know, $500,000+ worth of coffee across the ocean.
Yeah,
on a light estimate, you feel me?
Man, and I think, and what I just want to say about that, it all starts in the mind, man.
Yep. But I'm just saying, we gotta hype you up, bro. That's a big accomplishment as a black man in America to be moving that much merchandise, and it's legal work.
Legal work.
You moving that much legal work across the ocean, bro? That's huge. I got
to
get my.
I think trying to be minority suppliers, I think, is what's important, man. And like you said, reclaiming that power is important. I think. That's what we want to exhibit.
Mm-hmm. That's what we want to show. That's what we want to bring to these coffee brands that's emerging in this industry.
Yeah.
Is that we have you, you for all you coffee brands out there, you have a Black-owned specialty coffee supplier that you can go to.
Shout out to Tacobi. He just said, so I can start my brand tomorrow, right? Hey, he's like, hey, bro, hop in the DM. That's where it go down in the DM. You know what I mean? That's where it happens. And that's where we met. You know what I mean? Like, when you were starting, bro, we didn't have... When I say we didn't start with any money and we haven't had investors, like, outside of y'all, I'm DM. He was like, yo, this is how much is per pound? I was like, I'm going to get back to you. You know what I mean?
It's amazing from where we that first DM started from. Shout out to my co-founder, Ade, too, because I think he was the first one.
He connected us.
Like, with Maurice. And then, so, like, from where we started, from that conversation to where you are, man, it's just testament to, like, the grind. Testament to the innovation, the creativity. You got the space. You educating the hood. You got the merch on lock. You got the coffee on lock. You about to go to the continent. You know what I'm saying?
Like, shoot the doc. So we can really educate people, take our own pictures. You know what I mean?
This is the type of stuff that we bring to the industry that we're going to continue to cultivate our own alternative industry within the specialty coffee industry.
And let me say, bro, Black culture has always been the arbiter of cool.
Of everything.
So when this happens, not if, but when, we know it's going to benefit. It's going to benefit everybody else. It's going to benefit from the growth of a new demographic. Everybody else is also going to benefit from the growth, from the ideation of new marketing strategies, innovations, the emergence of coffee merch becoming a thing, the ideas that people like No Free Coffee are bringing to the table and really taking a pop-up to a different level.
Yeah,
like, I think I saw Kehlani, who was in line or something like that. They got folks like with the blue check sliding through. You know what I mean? On some specialty coffee stuff.
And I think, and I want to make this point too, because I think our culture, I'm never here to exclude another ethnicity, another race, as in terms of we work with everybody, man.
Like, yep.
We work with who work with us.
Yep.
And I think our people has always been like that.
Facts.
We ain't never been racist towards another group.
Facts,
we always got that and
the
group,
shout out to me, like, the people who put me on the most was the Latino community. They really so my mentor Martin Mayorga has really taught me everything I know, and like seeing his heart to help his community, we talk about Black on Black grind, seeing his heart to help his community inspired me to say, bro, we can really bring so much positivity to our communities if we just sit down and collaborate and really bring that Black on Black grind there. So,
and imagine where we're gonna be in another year or two, man.
Bro.
Where we can take this thing,
jobs we can provide, bro.
And if we just stay in that mentality of that powernomics, if we stay in that mentality of collaboration, and being intentional, is we will further along. Everybody grows. Everybody will glow and grow. You feel me? As you continue to work and do the work that we're supposed to, and I think that. It's just exciting to see different brands emerge like that, like they're y'all doing.
Yeah, bro.
And to be able to supply these beans for y'all, like, that's our job as Equatorial, is to test the quality, make sure we bring in over quality coffee to present to the brands and to their consumers.
Yeah, bro.
And if we do that,
my man brought some samples with him when he came. Bro said, I got a anaerobic Ethiopian natural. I was like, yo, folks ain't doing this. But we did say we wanted to open it up to the audience, man. So, Tremaine, I know you were trying to hop in. Did you want to go live? If you do, you just need some headphones, because Tremaine's kicking it at the shop with us right now. You know what I mean? So, you just need some headphones so we don't have the audio bleed. And then I think I saw the homie Oze had joined the live. He wanted to tap in, you know what I mean? So if you want to tap in, you can. The best way to go live is through the Patreon link. But if you want to go live here on IG too, bro, we can do that. That's cool. If not, we're gonna wrap it up.
I'm answering any questions, you know?
Yeah.
I see how many questions over there. Is a question?
No, that's just a racist. We got racists in the chat, bro. But yeah, I think this is something I'm super excited about. We appreciate you, man, for coming through.
You know, I appreciate being here, man. You know, I touched down in Memphis and I had to stop.
Bro,
you
feel me? It's crazy.
There ain't no doubt about that. Like I said, like what y'all doing here, man, is I see you got a whole team, man. You got a whole team.
The crew is crazy right now.
The crew is crazy right now.
Yeah, and the crazy part, bro, is it's all legal work. And I know that makes us mad. Like, I see the dude in the chat right now. He said, better slinging that rock on the corner, homies. You know what I mean? It's like, you know they mad that we not going to jail right now and doing free labor. They mad that we're taking care of ourselves. You know what I mean? And that just makes me happy.
Yeah.
It means, you know, like when the enemy is mad, when Satan is mad, that means God is black. Yeah. So, you know, you're doing something right. If you weren't, doing something, if nobody was mad, bro, then you're not doing nothing of significance. Right. You look at how people respond. To Dr. King and Malcolm X.
You gonna always have a haters.
Yeah, bro. But if you ain't got no haters, bro, you ain't getting no haters. You know what I mean? You know you're doing it right, bro. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah, so it's been a cool journey, man.
Yeah.
I think we just getting started. You feel me?
Yeah, facts, bro.
I think there's so much more that can happen, so much more that we can do as a people in this industry. You see the creativity. If you tapped into the industry right now, as we are, we living it every day, you see what we doing. You know what I mean? You see the brands. We named a couple brands.
You know what I mean? Y'all check into them, bro.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And there's many more of them out there. And we bringing our swag and our culture into the specialty coffee. Facts. And it's about to take off. The more we educate, the more we start to market the way we know how to our people, then that formulates and creates more coffee consumers and more coffee drinkers. And then imagine, shout out to the Gold Brew.
Oh, yeah. You already there.
Shout that out. We're the game.
So we're launching that in Orange Mound for the Juneteenth event. That's our coffee drink for non-coffee drinkers. Really elevated.
So fire, yo. Let me
bro, you got to take another sip. You got to take it out. Hold up.
Yeah, you got to say it. Like,
yeah, hold up.
I just want to say, like, it's so
bro.
It's good. And what's cool about it is that it's a type of beverage that I know our people will like to drink because it's cool, it's refreshing.
Yeah, it's familiar with the little amber bottle. Other type of beverage in that joint.
No doubt. But not to be confused with that lean.
You know what I mean? But this joint is for you. Yeah, bro, it makes you feel good. Alters the mood in a way that don't leave you down and out. You know what I mean?
Facts.
So that
type of creativity and innovation in terms of beverages is important.
Yep.
What type of beverage and product that you bring into the industry
to the consumer?
To the consumers, bro.
And it's, I think a part of it too is like you got to be creative. When we talk about that creativity, like it requires someone to be able to say like, man, I'm going to listen to what the consumer says. I'm going to listen to my community. And I think that's one of the things that specialty coffee is not good at, is listening to the consumer, because there's so much focus on elevating the product and the process. But it's like, you know, for a while, I didn't want an espresso machine. Like, oh, it's a colonizer machine, sugar and cream. But yo, when we were just doing it on Wednesdays, and I saw the smile on somebody's face when I gave a little brown sugar latte, we was doing like bootleg Starbucks drinks, and they want like it's not a smile. It's like this is literally bringing joy to people's lives. And you don't know what somebody went through that day.
Exactly.
You don't know what they had to go through just to get here. And if it's an opportunity to give somebody joy, and that means I need to get over my coffee nerdery, you know what I mean?
Right.
Nerdery. You just need to get over yourself. You know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, and from a business perspective, it's about the consumer.
The consumer's always spending the bread.
That's what I'm saying, bro. So it's like it's that balance of education, but also meeting people where at and elevation and transformation and all the other actions. You know what I mean? It's a balance. And so being able to meet with people and tap in with people is one of those things where we're like, man, we're excited to do it. And it's helping us to grow and see like, yo, okay, so that's where the whole idea of Gold Brew is like, let's make something refreshing, but there's still highlights where you can taste the it's obviously not juice. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's something in here. And you can even taste the difference. Like, I remember sliding it to people. They can taste the difference when we use different coffees.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. So then
that's all part of the experimentation.
It's a gateway to start getting into different varietals, different origins and all that. You know what I mean? So it is what it is, bro. We appreciate y'all for tapping in with us. Shout out to everybody who joined us on the live, everybody who joined us on IG. You know what I mean? We're going to tap in with y'all soon. And y'all keep that coffee black. We out.